Welcome, everybody. This is the Sports Passion Podcast. And today, it's Eric Jacinto with my co-host, Kyle Lutz. How are you today, Kyle?
Thank you for having me on, Eric. I'm good.
This is our debut podcast, and we'll be talking about the 76ers and the Phillies today. What do you want to start out with, Kyle?
Well, I guess since the Phillies won today, 2-1, interleague play today versus Minnesota at home, I guess we can start off with that. Reese Hoskins later in the game had a big two-run home run that just cleared the wall in left field in the little flower bed. I know you didn't watch the game on TV, but they got good pitching
today.
Yeah, I know you listened on the radio, but they got good starting pitching again from Zach Eflin, who had a good start the first time around. And this was actually, they mentioned this on the broadcast, that this was the first time in 51 years that the Phillies had a 105 start on a Sunday game in the season, which is crazy. So I want to get your thoughts. What are your thoughts so far on the pitching staff, especially guys like Zach Eflin and Velasquez and Pavetta, guys that are at the bottom of the rotation? What have you seen so far? What are your thoughts on them?
I'm a huge believer in Zach Eflin since last year. So, and I predicted him in my article, my preview article for the Phillies, that he's going to be the breakout star for the pitchers this year. I think he can win like 15, 16 games this year. It's an ERA under 3. Maybe I'm too optimistic, but I believe in the kid. He's only 24 years old. Nick Pavetta, I still need to see more from him. And Mr. Velasquez, I think he would be better served in the bullpen as like a 7th inning guy or a 6th inning guy where he can get like 6 outs. And I think they need to bring up one of the kids that they had last year, like Ranger Sanchez, I think his name, or Cole Irvin.
I've really been impressed so far, especially with Eflin. I mean, Nola had that bad start, I believe, versus Washington several days ago, but less than a week ago, in Harper's return to Washington on April 7th, Eflin pitched a really good game, 5 innings, but he only allowed 3 hits, 0 runs, only 1 walk, but he struck out almost double digits. He had 9 strikeouts and fewer than 90 pitches, and then he had another good game today. And when you were mentioning about Velasquez, I agree with that. I think he would be better served in a long reliever type role where he goes a few innings. If the starting pitcher, gets pulled early after a bad start, Velasquez can go maybe the fourth or fifth and sixth inning, the placeholder before the bullpen kicks in, because, this bullpen is not looking very good so far. David Robertson obviously was plucked from the Yankees, but, it's obviously very early in the season, but he's been poor. And we don't know what Dominguez can do long term, but I want to get your thoughts on the bullpen too. Do you think the bullpen needs a guy like Craig Kimbrel added, or do you think they're fine the way it is?
I'm in the middle of this. I keep going back and forth, and I like Craig Kimbrel, but remember he didn't close out the World Series last year. Chris Sale did. So that is kind of a red flag to me, because he didn't get the last 3 outs of the most important game in the season. And maybe that's why the Red Sox didn't want to bring him back. I mean, I think he still has the stuff to be a good, great closer. But that's a red flag right there. And nobody even wanted to touch him during the offseason. There was no rumors and there was rumors here and there about us, but he wants too big of a contract. I understand that he wants the money, and that's his right. like carpeted. But a reliever like him, closer, 32 years old, $100 million, that's a lot of money to spend on a reliever.
Yeah, well, it's happened before where relievers, we got like really high average annual contracts in terms of the amount of money per year. But I really think, I guess it's to be determined at this point. If the bullpen today only pitched two innings, but they pitched well in relief of Eflin, who went seven innings and had over 100 pitches but got the win. Or Robertson, Adam Morgan, and Hector Neris, you know, both came in and held down the fort in relief. But so you don't think that this team needs an extra or a bullpen guy, or do you think that the starting rotation needs an extra bump, or what are your overall thoughts on the pitching as far as adding another guy in from free agency to kind of supplement what we already have?
I think we need to wait until like maybe June or July to see if the Diamondbacks or Giants are out of it. I mean, are willing to trade one of their lefties in Madison Bumgarner or Robbie Ray. I'm really high on both of them, especially Robbie Ray, which I believe is only 26 years old. And I think he's still on his rookie deal. And I think he would fit well with as a 1-2 punch with Nola. And then Jake as number 3, and Eflin as number 4, and Nick as number 5. I think that would be a great rotation for the rest of the season if we can get one of them for cheap.
Yeah.
What do you think?
I agree about Ray. He's still on his earlier deal. He's, you know, he had a good year a couple years ago with Arizona. You know, I think this rotation is starting to, you know, come together a little bit. Another thing is I think they could definitely, if they're in the hunt and if they're in the market for a starting pitcher come the July trade deadline, I definitely think they could add Madison Bumgarner, who obviously we know has a great postseason track record, is a good hitter. He's won several Silver Sluggers from the mound as a hitter. You know, he's off to a good year this year, even though he has two losses. He hasn't gotten any run support because he has an ERA below 2. And he's just, you know, outside of some injuries the last couple of years, he's produced year in and year out. He doesn't get a whole lot of wins, but he's going to give you, you know, a maximum amount of effort every time. And I think he's a guy that's very humble and is obviously very familiar and comfortable in a winning environment if he were to be traded for some prospects here. So would you entertain a thought of trading for Bumgarner at the trade deadline, or do you think the team is
absolutely
okay as it is?
Absolutely, 100%. Go ahead.
Yeah, I definitely think it would definitely suit them to kind of look at, you know, we're not sure what some of the other guys at the bottom of the rotation are going to do. Eflin has been good. I think Nola will regain form from last year. Still early on. Arrieta was injured last year, and he's been so-so this year. I think he can be the guy that he was, maybe not his Cy Young year when he was with Chicago 4 years ago, but definitely better than last year, where his ERA was hovering around 4, and obviously, like I said, he was injured. But I think we can get a guy that wins 16, 17 games, maybe 15 games, but has like a 3 to 3.30 ERA and a decent amount of strikeouts, because – Arrieta is not going to overpower guys, but he has, you know, good breaking pitches, and he's, when he's healthy, he's usually very consistent too. He usually is a guy that can complement a ace pitcher like Nola. So it should be interesting to see what happens. But switching on from pitching to the lineup, what are your thoughts so far on not only the addition of Harper just as a personality, because Harper went to the Sixers game, he met Allen Iverson, he rung the Liberty Bell at center court at the Sixers game, He was there with Carson Wentz and Reese Hoskins. But aside from that, on the field with his bat and in the field at right field, what are your thoughts so far as of Harper's effort through the first, you know, handful of games?
I love the effort. Yesterday, I don't know if you watched the play where he leapfrogged the catcher.
Yep.
Which was
yeah,
a scary
I saw
play
that.
Because that was a scary play because he could have, you know, had a real serious injury there. But I love the effort there. I love the hustle he did to second base yesterday. Or what, third? I forget. It was second base yesterday in one of the innings. I just love the hustle for him and the passion.
Yeah, it was later in the game, and he sprawled over the catcher. He was a little late getting on the pop fly when he was at third getting to home. I think he would have scored if he got in there like if he ran a hair faster when the center fielder caught the ball in the game yesterday. But so far he has a OBP. It's obviously very early, but he's hitting like right around 400. He's drawing a lot of walks. Obviously, for his career, he's been a walk magnet. He averages over 100 per year, and last year he led the league in walks. And coming into this year, after they signed him, I wouldn't be surprised, and I think it's realistic to say that in the National League, when the season ends, the Phillies could have several silver sluggers. You look at who they signed. Obviously, Real Muto was a silver slugger behind the plate last year with Miami. Obviously, at first base, Hoskins is back at his natural position, and he had the home run today. And I think he could be a guy that benefits being behind Harper. And then you have McCutcheon, Harper, maybe Garrett doesn't have a lot of pop. What's that?
Oh, yeah, Gene. I mean, I think Gene's going to be a good on-base guy and an OPS guy.
We saw what Franco has done so far, too. He's benefited from not being in the four-hole or the three-hole anymore, and the pressure's, off of him to be the guy now that Harper and Hoskins are here and McCutcheon and other guys are here ahead of him in the lineup. But, it's interesting because Romuto, the Phillies haven't had a silver slugging catcher in almost 30 years since Darren Dutch Dalton in 92. So he's really revitalized. We had Michael Lieberthal and we had Chooch, but we really haven't had a hitter that this, quality, in quite a long time. And I definitely think Harper is rubbing off on other guys. So what are your thoughts overall on some of the signings aside from Harper? I know you like Segura, but what about McCutcheon and Real Muto as far as your opinion on the Phillies signing them this past offseason?
I love the Andrew McCutcheon signing because I think he's a leader off and on the field, and I think he's rubbing off Harper and as vice versa. I think they rub off each other as the leaders of the team, and Hoskins as another leader. I think they have leadership this year, as opposed to maybe they didn't last year because they were so young, and Gabe was in his first year. And I know a lot of people are not high on Gabe, but I'm a Gabe guy, and I believe in the guy. So I hope he can stay here and prove himself here as a manager. What's your thought,
well,
Kyle?
If he continues, I'm really impressed with him so far this season. He's had a couple of things that were weird, but overall, last year obviously he made a lot of like rookie mistakes as a manager, and I think it's fair to let him play out a couple more years as manager and see how he does, especially now with such a lineup. You look at the number one through six hitters, and that's not even including guys like Franco, who are obviously, like I mentioned, succeeding down the bottom of the order. But you have a good, one through five, lineup. You have, decent hitters at the bottom of the lineup. You could add guys at the trade deadline. You have Nola. You have some decent pieces in the bullpen. Now you have a guy like Zach Eflin who versus both National League and American League hitters has shown that so far he's been good. If he keeps this up, he'll definitely be, you know, one of the most improved Phillies I've seen, you know, in quite some time, at least from the mound. And I think Hoskins, yep, being back at first, I think that definitely benefits him. He wasn't, you know, that was another mistake Gabe made, putting Santana at first,
yeah,
and putting Hoskins at penciling him at left field last year. As you probably saw and as you probably remember, Hoskins just, you know, in my opinion, he wasn't comfortable at left field. Some guys are okay making the adjustment. It's not like going from catcher to first base, you know.
Exactly.
I think he's more comfortable now than he was, but it should be pretty interesting. So as far as Aaron Nola, what are your thoughts on him so far? Do you think he'll have another year last year? If you look at his stats last year, 17 wins, 2.37 ERA, over 200 innings. He was in the top three voting for Cy Young behind DeGrom, yeah, and Scherzer. And obviously he was in the running all year, and he was the all-star. You know, he's had a bad start this year in his first couple starts, but I think he'll come around. What are your thoughts on Nola as far as what he can accomplish this year?
I think I've told you this before. I think Nola's going to win the Cy Young this year. I think I predicted 20 or 21 wins and an ERA about 2.30. I think he's capable of doing that. I think he's capable of leading the staff to the promised land. I know I'm sounding optimistic, but I believe in him too. And I think Eflin's going to be the number to impress. I think he's going to be that veteran that can help Nola and Eflin and Nick in this rotation. And if we somehow get Robbie Ray or Magbum. Here's another name, a lefty. What do you think of Danny Duffy from Kansas City?
It depends. Danny Duffy's had a really good career, and Kansas City's just been, you know, really bad ever since their World Series win versus the Mets a few years ago. But I think Duffy's is he a free agent or is he injured this year? Because was he on the disabled list? I think he was having shoulder problems, but I really wouldn't go after him because I actually just looked it up now. He was placed on the 10-day disabled list.
He's injured
a couple weeks ago with shoulder tightness, and last year he just I think he was injured. I think it was similar to Arrieta, where his stats reflected his his health, and vice versa. He just wasn't himself. He's not a guy that goes a lot of innings too. I'm not a huge fan of his. He had a couple good years, especially on some pretty good Royals teams that made the playoffs. But outside of that, he was poor in the playoffs too. And he had an ERA over 5 in his career. So I'm not a Danny Duffy guy, but, you know, it should be interesting to see what happens, because I definitely think that the market will soften up come July. And, you know, maybe Tampa Bay will, you know, if they're out of it by then, maybe they'll be taking offers for Blake Snell, their ace, who I believe he did win the Cy Young last year in the American League and won 20 games. He's gonna obviously require a lot of prospects, but not only going to get paid, but he's going to require a lot in return. So if the Phillies really want to add another guy, if they think they can beat out Washington and the Braves and the Mets for the division title and do some damage, if they want to get beyond just the division series, you know, they're going to have to add another piece. But I definitely agree with you on the rotation. I think Nola obviously has his place at the top, but outside of that, I think Eflin has you know, shown that he can be a number two guy. Arrieta is a veteran number three guy that can be, you know, both effective on and off the mound. And probably Pivetta at number four, and we're not sure about five because I don't think they even know themselves, management, what to do with Velasquez. Because like you mentioned, he's, you know, he can be inconsistent. You know, he has good breaking pitches. A couple of years ago, he struck out in one game. He had 16 strikeouts versus the Padres. So I think he has potential, but he hasn't really shown it yet. So it should be interesting to see. So.
And there's several kids in AAA right now. I think Cole Irving, is that his name? Ranger Sanchez, I think.
Yeah, the Phillies have some decent prospects. You know,
Ranger Sanchez.
Yeah, I'm not really overly enthusiastic about bringing up guys this year unless we really need them. I think if Eflin, Nola Eflin and Arrieta can secure that 1-3 spot and we either add a reliever or the bullpen lives up to its potential, I think we'll be okay.
Mm-hmm.
The 4 and 5 guy, obviously we want a World Series with Jamie Moyer as a probably a number 3 or 4 guy and Joe Blanton. So,
Joe Blanton.
You know, if you have a Yeah, so if you have some good pitching at the top, you know, you don't need to – you know, baseball is weird like that. You know, at times you have great pitching like 2011 and, you know, you lose in the first round. And then other years you have a great offense. You know, so things have to work all at one time. So, you know, I'm interested to see how this season will play out.
Yeah, me too. Do you have a preference between Matt Bum and Robbie Ray, or would you take either?
I would be interested in Bumgarner. I just, you know, he's one of those interesting guys that he's not going to be like a Kershaw where, like, you go out there and Kershaw, year in and year out, his ERA is, like, near the top. Now, don't get me wrong, Bumgarner is an ace. If he continues to have a good, productive career, he could be a Hall of Famer, not quite yet. But, you know, he's a guy that has been on the radar. And now that he's no longer on productive Giants teams, I think he's going to definitely be looked at by several teams and several, you know, prospects and, you know, guys that are looking to look for a ace come the trade deadline. So, it should be pretty interesting, and not only his track record in the regular season, but just his consistency and his dominance in the postseason. And he has 4 or 5 really good pitches, and he can hit too. Like I mentioned, he's a silver slugger. He has for his career, he has 18 home runs. So, and he's hit near the Mendoza line at 200, which is amazing for a batter. So you figure if you've been in the league for 10 years and you've had, you know, nearly 2 home runs a year as a pitcher, that's pretty good. So I don't know about you, but either guy would be fine with me, but I would prefer Bumgarner.
Yeah, I would prefer Matt Bum. He's actually my favorite pitcher outside of Philadelphia. I don't know if he was on the team in 2010, but he's won at least 2 World Series. I think he's
won
3. The MVP.
He's on that team.
He was on that team? I wasn't sure.
Yeah, he was.
So,
yeah, he was, yeah.
So he's won 3 World Series, and I think he closed out.
He's been lights out, too. And the World Series, he's undefeated 4-0 with a 0.25 ERA. And, you know, he shut down a good Texas lineup in the 2010 World Series. Like you mentioned, he was MVP of the 2014 World Series versus Kansas City. He was also the MVP of the NLCS that year versus St. Louis. And then he was good the next World Series he was in 2 years later in 2016 he was good in the wild card game versus the Mets. But overall, he's been very consistent. So it should be pretty interesting to see what happens. I think the Phillies have a bright future ahead of them with Harper, Hoskins, Nola, and adding a guy like Bumgarner would not only solidify the rotation, but would add another lefty to split up the righties. So if you want to switch over switching topics a bit, the Sixers, they won last night by 20 over the Bulls, 116-96, and they have another 50-win season. It was in Chicago, and the Sixers pulled away in the second half. Despite some injuries they've had recently with Butler and Embiid, they were looking pretty good last night versus a bad Bulls team. Embiid had a double-double, and Redick had a good game. Did you get a chance to catch that game?
No, I was watching something else, but I kept track of it. And what did Ben Simmons do? I know people were being critical on him last couple games. He hasn't been showing up or something.
He had a decent game. He had 14 points, and he shot 6 for 10, although he only shot 2 for 5 from the free throw line. But he had 4 assists and 14 points. So he wasn't overly aggressive, but the bench was pretty good. Jonah Bolden had a good game with 11 points. He's been pretty decent. He's a backup power forward. And then McConnell, almost had a 10-point game, and then Marjanovic had 10 points as well. And then Monroe made his debut, Greg Monroe, obviously the former Piston. He had 9 points and contributed with a couple rebounds and assists in 10 minutes. So, I think Monroe makes the bench better. I'm not sure if you like that signing by the Sixers. I know he's a little bit older and he's past his prime, but Greg Monroe, power forward, but also can play center. He's almost 7 foot, and he's over 260 pounds.
I think he
was the first. What's that?
I think he's 28 years old, I saw.
He's 28, and he's been in the league for a decent amount of years. So almost a decade now with Detroit, Milwaukee, Toronto, Boston, Phoenix, and now the Sixers. So he's been around quite a bit, and he's been on some decent teams. So I expect him to contribute. And Tobias Harris, if he can have some quality minutes and contribute in the playoffs, I think this team, I think they're going to avoid Boston in the first round. Thankfully, Boston just needs a loss, and the Brooklyn won last night, and they beat Milwaukee, which is surprising. So if the Sixers win any of their next two games, they clinch the number 3 seed and will avoid having to play Boston in the first round, unlike last year. So currently, if the playoffs started today, it would be in the Eastern Conference, Milwaukee against Detroit, 1-8, number 2 seed Toronto versus the Magic. Brooklyn is the number 6 seed versus Sixers. And then the Celtics would host the Pacers. And then the Celtics and the Sixers both have 2 games remaining in the schedule. So it should be pretty interesting. They actually play tonight, Boston does, versus
Orlando.
Yeah, so if Boston loses tonight, the Sixers will clinch the number 3 seed without having to win another game, and then we'll figure out whether or not we'll face either Brooklyn, Orlando, or Detroit, who are all within a half game of each other. So who would you rather play if you're the Sixers? Now that it looks like, assuming something crazy happens, now that we're not going to face Boston, would you rather face Brooklyn, Orlando, or Detroit?
If I had to pick, maybe I would say Detroit.
Yeah, I would probably take Detroit as well. Miami is actually a game back of Detroit and a game and a half out of the number 6 spot behind Brooklyn. So if Miami wins the remaining games and the other teams lose, Miami, we could face them. But it looks like it'll be it looks like it'll be Brooklyn, Orlando, or probably Detroit. So it should be pretty interesting to see. But I haven't been really impressed with the Sixers all that lately. But they've been injured, so it'll be pretty interesting to see what they can do when they put it all together. So I'm not sure what you're thinking lately, but they've lost prior to last night. They lost three straight, and they've lost five out of their last eight games.
Since the Boston win.
What's that?
Is that five out of eight since they beat Boston? I believe so.
That was after they beat Boston when they went on that six-game winning streak. The Sixers beat Boston, and then they went on a brief losing streak, and then it's been kind of like back and forth. But as of lately, they've been either injured
right.
and losing by 10 or 11 points. You know, it's been pretty close, but they lost to the Mavericks by 20 the other day, and they've been kind of a funk, I guess is the best way to put it. But I want to get your opinion, since we haven't really discussed this online, and obviously we're discussing this now, first time on the show. What are your thoughts overall as Brett Brown as a coach? Do you like him, dislike him? The Sixers won 50 games 2 years in a row with him as coach. So, you know, he's pressing some of the right buttons, but, you know, he's playing with, pretty good rosters. So I think that has to be part of it. But if you had to give your honest opinion on Brown as a coach on the court, what would you assess him as? What are your thoughts on him?
I wouldn't say a big fan. I'm a fan of Brett Brown. I think he deserves his chance in the playoffs. I think everybody thinks he might get fired if they don't make it past the second. I don't know what you think. I have this feeling he might get another season to see what he can do with the starting five. Because I do think Jimmy Butler and Tobias Harris will re-sign with the team.
I think they will. Yeah, I think they're going to bring back, the guys that they acquired. I think this is a tight-knit group. I think the guys gel well and get along together. I think Simmons, he's still learning some things, and I think he's still could be even better. I think he's a good point guard, and I think he has the talents to be, an all-NBA type of guy if he puts it all together. But he hasn't quite found his shooting touch yet. He's still learning the game. He's still learning the system. We're not sure yet if he'll have a new head coach soon because, like you mentioned, if the Sixers lose in the first round or if they have a bad loss in the second round, they might let go of Brown, who's had some good seasons here after a rebuild. But, only two of his winning seasons – only two of his seasons here were winning seasons. So I think it's only fair to give Brown the chance to try to succeed in a winning environment with a successful team front to back, because obviously, as we know, from 2013 to 2016, the team didn't win more than 28 games, and they
16,
averaged probably
yeah.
around 25 games a season as far as wins. So, and then last year, they put it together, once guys got healthy and once they added some pieces. And I think this year they're right around the same as they were last year. But if they get guys healthy, Embiid's improved as a shooter. It's just about whether or not they can remain healthy. I know that sounds like a cliche, or it may sound like that, because in any sport for a good team, to be a contender and to be, either from anything from a first round exit to, a conference finals appearance, you have to stay healthy. But, really speaks volumes, because, in the NBA, it can be a physical sport, and, with guys that are 7 foot, they get injured often. So it should be pretty interesting to see what happens. how far do you think this team can go in the playoffs? Do you think this team can beat the Celtics? They hung. I was watching the game the other day. They lost to Milwaukee, who, like I mentioned, as you know, is the number one seed in the East. They lost to them by 6 points, but late in that game, the Sixers had a lead, and they had a they had a lead by a couple points in the second half, and they had a lead going into the fourth quarter, and then Milwaukee just ran away with it.
Yeah,
you know, especially some of their starters. But what are your thoughts on the Sixers matchups for some of the top teams in the East? Do you think they can beat them?
I do believe they can get to the Eastern Conference Finals. I've been saying for a couple months that my prediction is Milwaukee versus 76ers in the East Finals, and I'm going to stick by that. And if I'm wrong, then I'm wrong. But I believe in this team, and I think they can put it together. And I think Joel Embiid is we're going to see a different level of him in the playoffs. I think he's motivated after last year losing to the hated Celtics. He wants to win the championship badly as anybody in this city. And I do think he's going to lead this team. I think Butler's going to lead this team. I think Ben Simmons is going to show up. I think we're going to see a different team than the last couple games in the playoffs. But honestly, you never know what could happen in the playoffs. Who knows? There could be an upset there, and we could get to the East Finals somehow, and maybe even the NBA Finals.
Well,
what's your thought?
I don't think the Sixers would be able to play Milwaukee in the first round unless Toronto lost. If Toronto got upset by the number seven seed, which is Orlando, if all the top teams, like 1 through 4, won in the first round, Milwaukee would play Boston. Or even if Indiana won, Milwaukee would play them. So since Sixers are wedged between, you know, Boston and
Toronto
and Milwaukee
in the second,
and Toronto as well, the only way that the Sixers would play the Bucks, I believe, in the second round would be if Toronto lost and Milwaukee and the Sixers won. I think that would be the only way. And then we would play the 4 and 5 seed, and then Toronto would play Milwaukee would play the number 7 seed, which is Orlando. So I think there's a good chance that Toronto wins the first round, even though they split with Orlando this year. They have a talented roster. You know, they're thriving for the first time in a while. Milwaukee is as well. So the East is arguably better than the West this year. And in the West, you have Golden State and Denver up top, and then you have Houston, Portland, and the Jazz are the other three top five teams. So it should be pretty interesting. But what are your thoughts on the Western Conference teams this year? Do you think Golden State returns to the finals and it's a Milwaukee Golden State NBA Finals?
Hold on. I just want to say one more thing about the Eastern Conference.
Okay.
The 1-8 matchup will face the I believe the 4-5 in the second round, and then the winner of the 2-7 faces the winner of 3-6. As soon as how the NBA works. There's no reseeding in the NBA.
Oh, okay. Yeah, you know, they change it up a lot. I honestly forgot, and I was trying to do the math in my head as I was looking at it. So I think if there were some upsets, they could face Milwaukee in the second round. If it came down to, this may sound off, but even though they're the number one seed, I would probably rather face Milwaukee in the second round rather than Toronto and Boston. It just seems like we match up better for some teams. You know, obviously, we're a disaster against Boston. you know, we blew those leads in the playoffs last year, and then, you know, this year, you know, we haven't been, you know, overly great versus them. So, you know, I would like to see a Milwaukee Sixers conference finals or a semifinals, but, you know, it would be pretty interesting to see. This year versus some of the East teams, we're 1-2 versus Milwaukee, but that second loss last week, we were missing some of our starters versus Boston. This year. We did miss Butler. You know, Butler's timetables, he's coming back soon. So, you know, I think Butler will definitely benefit us once he comes back. He complements Harris really well. So now looking at some of the splits, we're 1-3 versus Boston. Toronto, we're actually 1-3.
1-2.
Milwaukee,
1-3.
We're 1-2 versus Milwaukee. And
we beat them in their face, so.
Yeah, so it should be pretty interesting to see what happens. So I think it would be a fun rest of the season. You know, we have some easy teams left the last two games. So if we can, you know, get to 50 wins, get to 52 wins like last year. We face at Miami, who's still vying for a playoff spot. We play them Tuesday night in Miami.
And Dwayne Wade.
And Dwayne Wade, and then we close out the season at home the next night versus Chicago again. And then, you know, the playoffs are on the weekend. So it should be pretty interesting to see what happens. So one last thing before we go. I want to get your win total. I know we'll talk about this more on future podcasts, but going back to the Phillies, what are your thoughts on, just for a minute, do you think the team can win over 90 games and win the NL East this year?
Yep. Yes, I do. I had them at 93, and maybe at some point that could change, depending on how the season plays out. I truly believe that this team can win the East. I'm not trying to be biased, but I believe in this team, and I'm sure you do too.
Yeah.
And what do you think?
I definitely think they have the good hybrid now of both good starting pitching, a talented roster in the lineup 1-9, or 1-8
and leadership
would be pitcher. Maybe they could use an extra bat, but it should be pretty interesting. I said 91 wins, and I said they make the playoffs as an NL East division winner, and then we'll see what goes from there. You know, if they add some pitching at the deadline, we'll see what happens. But before we go, we want to plug our Twitter accounts, both our personal and for the podcast and for the website. You can contact me on Twitter at Kyle_Lutz_. So that's at Kyle_Lutz_. And I know your personal Twitter is all caps Big E Jacinto, JACINTO. And did you want to plug in the podcast Twitter handle as well as the website?
Philly SP and then podcast. Philly SP podcast. And that's the same thing as our email. It's phillyspodcast@gmail.com. That's phillyspodcast@gmail.com. If you want to email any questions for the next show or something, feel free to
email questions, and we'll have Ryan on and Habib and some of the other guys on next time. And people are welcome to call in, and the call-in number that will also be on the website and on the Twitter account. So, Eric, I want to thank you for having me on. It was a great debut episode.
Yep. Thank you, Kyle, for doing the show today. And I think I got my nerves out, and it was a great show.
Absolutely. So we'll talk next time, and that's a wrap for the Passion Podcast. I'm Kyle Lutz with as a co-host with my head.